KCAR 101. Get the 411 on your 911. Here's your host and emergency room physician, Dr. Lee Vinoker.
Hi, and welcome back to ER 101 from the American College of Emergency Physicians. My guest and expert on domestic violence is Dr. Diana Feit. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Feit, when, you know, it can be frustrating. And even as a physician early on in my training, when I saw these victims and they would come back and back again, and I think that's why maybe in the past people kind of tended to blame them, wrongly so, because it seems like they're not getting out of this. They're getting injured, and yet they're coming back and they're having more injuries. So what are the instances that it appears that women stay in these relationships? And try and explain to everyone, you know, what happens with them and you know, why it appears that they are stuck in these relationships.
Right, it's a very good point to make about this situation, because naturally people do think, well, why don't you just leave, just get out of there? It's not that easy at all. For one thing, the economic situation is very desperate in some situations. The victim, who is generally a woman, might be put out on the street, have no place to go, have no job to take. Often if they've had a job in the past, the perpetrator has managed to make sure she has lost that job. If she has children, they're going to be at risk if they're out on the street. The perpetrator or male will often threaten that if she does leave, he will kill or hurt the children. He will harm or kill her family members. There are so many threats put forth that if she leaves or she tells anybody, that even worse harm will come. There's reasons that are so complicated that the person just finds it very difficult to leave.
Yeah, and that's probably the best point that you're making here, is that that is the most dangerous time in these abusive relationships, when the victims do attempt to leave and the batterer kind of loses that bit of power and control. That's when we hear about the news stories of the shootings and the violence and the very severe violence. So that's why it appears that they're staying, but they have to make that decision themselves, because it is the most dangerous. And then I wanted to ask you, so what's the key about that? And even as an emergency physician, they have to have some kind of safety plan or mechanism up when they finally do decide to do that.
Yes, if we get the chance to talk to the victim, we certainly want them to work with the local women's group if they can, or they can always call 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E, to get counseling or referral to a local women's shelter or group, because they can help them make a safety plan. This plan needs to be where the person perhaps has a designated place to go. They might have to actually hide their identity. They might have to take the children out of school and get somewhere else. They need to have in advance some things hidden that they can easily access, such as money, their driver's license, copy of birth certificates, passports, I mean, all sorts of vital information they need to take with them, and perhaps have hidden in a safe spot in case they are ready or desperately need to get out of the situation. But the Women's Center can definitely help them with a safety plan.
Yeah, these advocacy centers in Maryland, where I am in practice, we have some great groups. The Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence tirelessly works with the legislature to create and help create these laws related to stalking and domestic violence and protection orders, and extending the stay so that these women are protected, because often that's the other problem in the criminal system, especially if someone really isn't a criminal and it's just this domestic violence and they have no record. It's very hard for the courts to protect them, and that's why you know, in my opinion, and I want to know if you agree, you have to let them be ready and have everything in order when they do this, because oftentimes it is hard to protect them, and that's when you hear about these horror stories happening.
Yes, indeed. Even with protective orders, it takes nothing for the batterer to take a gun and go after the person. Nothing can stop them right at that moment if they make that decision. So the victim has to be very aware of that and make themselves as safe as possible.
Right. And there are, you know, there are great resources that emergency rooms have the numbers for in the state of Maryland. We have the House of Ruth, which has a wonderful shelter, and we have a faith-based group called Hana, which actually has a shelter for women that keep kosher and things like that, so that they can go for help. And I know the people that work in all of these shelters and on this network in Maryland, and they really try their best to help empower these women to make the decision and get them prepared for their life when they leave. They'll go to court with them. They'll do a lot of things. But it's still amazing to me. You know, we hear about cases. There wasn't one too, you know, several years ago in Maryland where a woman was murdered right on the steps of the court, you know, in front of, you know, a crowd of people with the advocates, with them attempting, you know, to get them protection orders. Because protection orders are really civil orders to start out. It's only when the batterer violates that civil order that it becomes a criminal case, correct?
Correct. And, yes, we hear, especially in Houston and in Texas, so many incidents that happen of murder-suicides or crossing protective orders all the time. So we strongly advocate getting with the women's group. The shelters are extremely secretive. There's just almost no way the batterer can find out where the person is, and they can get them definite change in identity, all sorts of things, if necessary.
Yeah, and that is true in most states. They really are hard to find, even if you want to try and go volunteer for them. they're kind of hard to find and out of the way. But it is important, and I think the key, and all states are different. But there is, and I know for Maryland, and there's a list of states, unlike child abuse, which has mandatory reporting, because this is a dangerous time and because these are adult women that need to make the decision for themselves, we don't always have mandatory reporting. I know in our state we have pro-prosecution, so if somehow the police do get called for a disturbance, the battered woman or battered spouse doesn't have to press charges. They prosecute regardless of that, because, you know, it sort of protects them because there's that intimidation for pressing charges. I don't know what it's like in Texas, but...
Well, you're right. Very few states have mandated reporting of domestic violence. That's why it's so underreported, because it's so dangerous potentially to the victim if
right.
The perpetrator finds out that they've talked to someone or the report has been made, then we can't put that victim at that increased risk. So most all states do not have mandatory reporting of domestic violence, but it is mandatory for child abuse.
Right. And very briefly, we just have a minute, but I think now the two agencies are talking together, because sometimes there is a child that either is neglected, related to the abuse or things, but the woman is being abused. And in the past, they would take away the privileges and the parental rights from the victim. And now I think they're starting to understand a little better. That if it's a woman in an abuse situation, a mother, that she's a victim too, and they're trying to work with both agencies together. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Feit. This has been informative, and this has been ER 101. I'm Dr. Lee Vanocur on Radio MD. Stay well.